Welcome back to the Unanimous Decision Podcast. I am your host, D-Palm. Follow me on Twitter at D-Palm66. Follow the show on Twitter at UDPod. Follow the entire MTR Network at the MTR Network. You found us. Do not lose us. Subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud maybe. I know definitely Spotify. Anywhere you get your podcast for absolutely free, 99. Make sure you go subscribe there. Leave that five-star review on the iTunes. We'll really appreciate it. If you have more you want to say, email us at udpodcast@gmail.com. Feedback, questions, notes, stories that we should cover. Let us know what's going on in your part of the world, and we'll go on from there. Before I introduce this week's guest, I do want to give a quick update on Between Two Palms. Susan was in New York for work. A lot of air quotes in there you can't see. But she's back now. We're going to be doing a episode for our next three Marvel movies. We'll also be dropping this week a very special Captain Marvel review. We took Susan out and saw it on Saturday. I actually was my second viewing at that point, but a huge fan. We're going to talk about that. There's also going to be some more Captain Marvel reviews across the network. I know Shannon's got one that's going to be behind the premium wall and one on the free wall. And then our spoiler review with myself, Chris, and Justin's actually recording right after this show, and that'll be behind the paywall later this week as well. If you're not premium, what are you waiting for? Go ahead and get premium. Get many more hours of content, a whole lot of bang for your buck, and even more of the MTR goodness in your ears. Today, I'm joined not by an MTR loyal member, but I'd say like MTR Jace. I'd say adjunct member. You're here enough. We've got Rich Fan from PW Torch's Deep Dive show and a host of other things. I'm not going to step on his toes by introducing him poorly. Rich, what's going on, brother?
Not much. And as a member of the quote-unquote VIP side of the MTR network, I can attest to the quality. I pay quarterly because that way I remember, and it's easier for me money-wise to kind of have it come out every 4 months or 3 months, whatever it is. Yeah, every 3 months. So it's great. I usually do a lot of the comic book clubs. And so, I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk about whatever it is you would like to talk about. I'm waiting with bated breath. And happy at some point to bash my former team and give praise to my new favorite team.
We will definitely get there. First and foremost, I put myself over and didn't even know it because I did not know you were a premium member. Glad to have you on. This makes me very happy. And I'm glad to see someone else is selling it on the show besides me. So you host the Deep Dive over at PW Torch. I have been a guest once or twice over there. We've had a lot of good talk about a lot of great conversations. I'm going to be visiting next Saturday for Austin Day. It's 316. That sound of the breaking glass means it's your ass. What are we going to be talking about on the Deep Dive over at PW Torch next week?
Well, last year when you had the generosity to come over and talk about it, or maybe it was 2 years ago, we kind of talked about just his influence. And this year I want to talk about what the next evolution of that is going to be. And I think it might, the future, as with most things, may be female in that regard. And I think the future of the next Austin might not necessarily be any of the women we see, but it will be a woman that can change the face of the WWE as opposed to merely giving them some taglines.
Okay, so for our fans of the squared circle of the sweet science, that's what I've taken from boxing. I'm stealing that and putting it into pro wrestling now. If you're a fan of pro wrestling, trust me, I'm not going to have Rich on and not talk pro wrestling. I'm not that stupid. I'm not that arrogant. We'll be talking about it in the back half of the episode. But we got to start with what I consider the biggest sports story of the week. And you got to remember, when I'm talking about this, and Rich, I think you can relate here. You and I aren't the same age, but we're similar age groups. I am 33 years old. I'll be 34 this summer. Mm-hmm. I grew up a Jordan guy. I was a Michael Jordan, dyed in the wool. You can't tell me nothing about Jordan. This is the greatest basketball player, the greatest competitor, the greatest athlete I'll ever see in my time. This week, LeBron James passed him on the all-time scoring list. And I want to go, because we're not here. People check, oh, he beat Jordan's record. It wasn't the record. Jordan's on the list. He's on the list. And he passed him. And they stopped the game against the Nuggets, and there was a little moment in Staples. It was nice, a little awkward because it's Staples this year and what's happening with the team. But there's a recognition. There will be no such recognition when and if LeBron passes Kobe in Staples, first and foremost. Second of all, what was your reaction to kind of the reaction? Because just kind of seeing it in real time, I built my night around watching this happen. I built my evening around, I'm going to watch him get these first 13 because I just kind of feel like I have to because – this is something that's mattered so much to me. When you watch LeBron do it, and we kind of watch the ways and you see kind of discussion around it this week, what was your initial reaction to seeing, oh, LeBron passed Jordan on the scoring list?
Well, to your point, I'm 37. I'll be 38 in May. So I have the, and as a Knicks fan, I have the distinct pleasure of seeing Jordan not only as in my generation the GOAT, but also the living embodiment of everything I fear and hate. So seeing him like year after year after year completely demolish the Knicks and just watch it happen every single time. It was something that was nightmare fuel for me as a young man. And now to see the petty side of me when I saw LeBron do it was like, yes, go off, King. But the way it happened and the awkwardness really did, and you could see the emotion for LeBron, but I think that emotion was exacerbated by, like you alluded to, the situation currently going on in Los Angeles and how it was kind of a Pyrrhic victory because sure, you passed Jordan, but the cost of it was you're currently on a team that's just the Isle of Misfit Toys, and it's really weird. And like you said, my personal opinion is that when he gets within a point of Kobe, a sniper will be mysteriously tackled in the rafters.
You
Which
couldn't
will
even
turn out
quite.
Scooby-Doo style to be Kobe.
Well, okay, so you mentioned the season. We'll talk about the season for a second. The Lakers right now are sitting at 30 and 35 after that game. They were 6.5 out of the playoff spot. They're not going to make the playoffs. They shut down Brandon Ingram. They shut down Lonzo Ball. They're putting LeBron on the minutes cap. It's a wrap for the Lakers. But let's be real about what this Lakers team was. This is a Lakers team that hasn't made the playoffs in 6 years. This is a Lakers team that, no matter what happened this season, was probably a long shot to contend for a title of anything. But we thought they made the playoffs with the big gap lost by a LeBron injury. That people were like, this is so ridiculous. Jordan lost a season in the 80s. Like, people get hurt. And the fact that LeBron hasn't gotten hurt to this point has gone to the point of kind of us being spoiled about it by him and his greatness. And I know people saying, oh, this it be it happening in LA is weird and happens later. For me, it's not weird. For me, it's just kind of. So Jordan was the ultimate in 1997 or 8 when he graduated, when he retired initially, it was said that Jordan was the ultimate winner. And that he dominated, he got to the final and dominated. Well, he lost in the first round a couple times, but you don't bring those up because it doesn't build the story. LeBron exists in a different way because, one, we look at celebrity, particularly in athletics, differently than we did in 1992. If Twitter existed in 1992, Michael Jordan would not be remembered as the greatest competitor of all time. He might be remembered as Kevin Durant. Let's be very real with that. But also, you got to take into account the different ways that LeBron has affected the game. And we'll talk about on the court in a second, but off the court, LeBron's ushered in an era of player movement and player power that guys didn't realize. You hear, I've alluded to this on another podcast, but there was a clip of Kobe and Tracy McGrady talking about the players joining up. And while they were a little bit resentful, you could hear them be wistful, like wish they'd played together. And they wish they'd known they had the power to exercise those options to allow that to happen. And so while I think some of the salt from this old timers and people even in our generation is, yes, we're holding on to the nostalgia of watching Michael Jordan do it at the highest level. He also did it against a depleted Lakers team at the end of their run. He did it against an upstart Suns. He did it against a Sonics team that just had really Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. He did it against Karl Malone and John Stockton twice. Like, it's not like he went through and just beat a series of world beaters on the way to do this. He versus that versus what LeBron. People say, "Oh, look at the finals record." We're going to see how people feel about the finals record when you get to see the ratings with LeBron not in the playoffs. Like, that's going to be really interesting and really telling. But more than that, to me, I think LeBron passed Jordan as the greatest player in my lifetime a while ago. You look at the career statistical standpoints, Jordan averaged 30 points, 6.2 rebounds, and 5.3 assists. Those are great numbers. LeBron's sitting right now at 27.2, 7.4 rebounds, and 7.2 assists. He has more all-star nods at 15 than 14 than Jordan. And people who say, oh, the rings argument. And that's cool, you can do that, but you got to remember that there are a lot of players out there who don't have rings who we still consider some of the all-time greats. Charles Barkley has no ring. No rings.
Are we going to put Big Shot Bob on the pedestal?
Well, that's a great point, but to wit, I'm not going to tell you that Patrick Ewing is an all-time great, but I'm also going to tell you that his lack of rings doesn't define him. He happened to be born in an era that happened to also include Michael Jeffrey Jordan. It's just a rough pill to swallow. It was an era where players didn't move. Now, in an era where players move and things like the Warriors are going to happen, and you got LeBron going to and beating possibly three Hall of Famers in a finals after being down 3-1, you really can't. I mean, and the ultimate trump card for me is LeBron's a better father. And that sounds so weird, and it sounds so like, oh, I'm reaching just to hurt Jordan fans. Guys, I'm a Jordan fan. I am 33. I grew up on this shit. I went to the Omni to watch the Hawks just to get eyes on Jordan. So I'm not coming from a place of like, oh, I need to make this argument tilted in my direction. I think the on-the-court stuff in and of itself outside of scoring is what does it for me, because Jordan's forte was a scorer. LeBron's is a facilitator, and he passed him as a scorer, which I think is crazy. So I'm not going to get into that one, but I think the fact that everything that he's done with his platform and with the modern idea of celebrity, because LeBron alluded to this in his post-game interview. He said, Jordan meant so much to us. He was aspirational. He was what he aimed to be. LeBron's more hands in the clay. It's like, here, I'm going to help lift you up. It's different. It's a different kind of help. It's a different year. It's a different era, of course. I just think that the impact is different, partially because the lens is brighter now. But even under that lens, there's no LeBron scandal.
No.
There's no LeBron gambling in Atlantic City stories. Talk to the people who run enough NBA circles. Everyone's got one dirty MJ story. Everyone. If Instagram was around in 1995, buddy, the last time LeBron missed the finals, Instagram wasn't a thing yet. Snapchat didn't exist. That's crazy to me.
I mean, look at the fact that when LeBron was at, and that's what sealed it for me, when LeBron was at his best, he took that Cleveland team from 3-1 down to beat one of the greatest collection of players I've seen on a basketball team with the sole purpose of beating him. It wasn't like they were built to beat everybody. They were built. They were the Hulkbuster, and they couldn't beat – they beat the Hulk twice, but the one time he did it, that's all you need to see. And a place like Cleveland, who had not seen success to that level since – now they might now with football, but basketball wise, they had not reached those heights without LeBron. They'd gotten close before with him. He left and they felt betrayed. He came back, made the owner shut up and sit in the corner for a couple of years. And then right when that owner started getting mouthy again, he won another ring and got out.
And he ushered in an era of players saying, oh wait, maybe it is the name on the back of the jersey they come to see. Maybe, just maybe, they're not here to see Dan Gilbert's Cavs. Because when LeBron left Cleveland, the downtown GDP dropped 3%. That's obscene. The man's an economic force. And people say, oh, a wasted year in LA. Hey, look. People say, oh, LeBron had too much input on the roster. One, you're now positing that Magic Johnson, is being told what to do by a man this much as Junior. You must not know Magic Johnson very well to say that. I'm not saying I do, but I've heard and I'm aware of his reputation, and I know that you don't become Magic Johnson by being a pushover.
No.
Secondly, the deal was LeBron's going to give you 4 years of security so you can build around him. If Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka can't get that done, it being a referendum on LeBron is striking to me. It's almost like they're moving goalposts. And lastly, let's say LeBron did put this roster together. Let's say this is his fault. Let's say this is all his creation, all his doing. So what? Does it make him any less a great basketball player? Does it make him any less the transformative forces on the court? And make no mistake, guys, if you're thinking, oh, this is LeBron saying pod. Guys, for every time I've had a podcast, every spring I've celebrated LeBronica. I'm very sad the season won't be coming this year. And you may ask yourself, what is LeBronica? Go through any of my archives. LeBronica is the time of year in the playoffs when LeBron says, I'm done playing with you. Last year, LeBronica fell in the second round when he swept Toronto out of existence and Dwayne Casey out of a job the same year he won Coach of the Year. It comes every year, and this year I won't be able to celebrate LeBronica, and that hurts me. So I'm going to celebrate today because he passed Michael Jordan on the scoring list, and everyone told me Michael Jordan's the best scorer of all time. LeBron did that when his first instinct is to pass. The defense has slipped. He's gotten older. No one's debating this. But man, I watched what he's done with the rosters around him. I watched him take Boobie Gibson to a finals. Not an Eastern Conference finals, an NBA final. And so if it takes Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma and Lonzo Ball to all get shipped out to bring in the pieces that they need to build in LA, do it. If you need to fire Luke Walton, and by the way, everyone knows how I feel about the Walton men, but you can't give me a case for keeping Luke. You can't. The rotations have been bad. He hasn't managed. Sure, things have gotten rough down the stretch, but that's why you get paid. You get paid to adjust and apply to things that you can't control. And if you can't do that, if your rotations are still this messed up with less than 3 weeks left in the season, why are you still here? If I'm the Lakers, if I'm Rob Pelinka, if I'm Magic Johnson, I know Jeannie West loves Luke Walton, but if I'm them, I'm looking at Tyronn Lue. Because everyone says, oh, Tyronn Lue went to the finals 3 times and only won it once. He didn't. Oh, he just had LeBron James. Look, guys, watch those last two Cavs teams. In the middle of the stream, he changes their entire offensive philosophy to make them Warriors East. They had the most threes in the league the year they lost to the Warriors their last time, not the Warriors. He recognized the paradigm shift. He recognized the talent that he had on his team, and he adjusted accordingly. If you're a coach and you say, oh, my players will adjust to my system, you're not a good coach.
And you don't have the ability to switch to the death lineup on the Lakers like he did when he was interim.
Well, you know, and I'm not here to discount what he did as an interim as a Steve Kerr. Very good job. But at a certain point, that was a self-preparing system.
Right.
You can damage it.
And he didn't have to be cute. I give him points for not being cute because there are some coaches who would have been cute in that situation.
I'm going to put my stamp on this.
Right. Like my dad called that overcooking the grits. Like you would have had the person who's like, yeah, I'm gonna put this in. Oh, crap, the grits. The whole point is to make the grits. And so I applaud him for that. But the more I've seen this, even from afar, because watching the Knicks, I have no room to argue with anyone's coaching, roster, or any sort of needs. The only thing I prayed was that LeBron continually kept hitting the screen button on his phone whenever Carmelo called.
It worked. Look, it worked. So whatever happens in LA is going to happen in LA. It's also going to be very interesting to see if they get able to land Anthony Davis. I know a lot of the Celtics fans and New Orleans fans are kind of banking on the idea that Danny Ainge is going to give them some sort of blockbuster deal from Boston. Fans, I would give you this. One, Danny Ainge does not give away things in trades. He likes to fleece people. And two, things are happening in Boston right now that don't make it look like the most stable place for Anthony Davis to land. So we'll see where he ends up. I think he's going to end up in L.A. I think the clutch client list is going to be strong in the Lakers next year. Talking about Bradley Beal, John Wall, and perhaps also Anthony Davis and those rumors of Jimmy Butler trying to make a move too. We'll see. Because this whole the cap's going up and there's all player movement, the guy who enabled that, the guy who empowered these guys is LeBron James, and they know that. Let's speak about empowered players in other sports, though, because there's another sport up there where they don't guarantee contracts and they don't say, oh, you know, and they say things that look to the nature of you've got your deal, so you got to play on it. In the last 2 years, two players on the same team have said, nah, bro, I'm good. And for some reason, the media and the press have been able to say the problems with the players. Well, so you don't have a problem. Antonio Brown, he may have a problem, but he doesn't have $30.1 million of them because that's how much money he's being guaranteed in his new deal as he moves to the Oakland Raiders. Happening this morning, breaking this morning, you and I were talking before we recorded. You woke up, you saw it, you were formerly a Bills fan, and you guys were in the running yesterday. The Bills were the rumored location until Antonio Brown said, I don't think I'm going there. As a former Bills fan, how does that read to you? And then also just kind of as an observer, what's your thoughts on this Antonio Brown landing in Oakland?
Well, two things. One, this is a perfect segue because if you watched LeBron's Barbershop HBO special, the reasons Antonio left were his manifesto was right there. And everyone wanted to put it under the fact that he colored his mustache blonde. Ben Roethlisberger throws a route that's intercepted by a defensive lineman, and he says Antonio ran the wrong route. Antonio, on that, which was again produced by LeBron, says, how do you know if I ran the wrong route? You just threw it to the defensive lineman. and he kept his mouth shut. And then he finally got to the point where he couldn't keep his mouth shut, and you have a GM say there's Ben and 52 kids. And when you're hanging around the gravitational pull of a LeBron James, and he's telling you, like he's telling all these other up-and-coming athletes, black men of industry, that you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen and let a quarterback be the only person with an owner mentality. You, as the superstar player, have earned the owner mentality. That changed the whole thing for the Steelers, because then you have a team like the Bills who, because of my intimate knowledge of my former team, I can tell you that was leaked for them to save face. And in doing so to save face, they wound up costing the Steelers draft picks that they might have recouped otherwise. So they came into this thinking, yeah, they went in thinking that they could just get him at the rate he was being paid, because the glory of playing in the NFL for another year would be enough. And he wanted money. And Drew Rosenhaus said he wanted money. And so they leaked to, you know, the only person that ran with the story, Ian Rappaport, that they were close and it was imminent, and then made it seem like they pulled out because they just couldn't handle him or what he wanted from them. When he basically said, and I've been saying this from the beginning, Antonio Brown is this generation's T.O. in terms of knowing his power. T.O., when he was traded from the Eagles to the when he was traded from the 49ers to the Ravens, didn't show up for his physical, and that voided the trade. No one knew that was something that could void a trade, because no one had done that before.
Right.
And so you could fast forward 20-something years, Antonio Brown told them, I will not report. And so rather than having the specter of a guy not showing up for a physical after you've traded for him, in the same year, mind you, that the Bills had a player retire at halftime. My dude was like, I don't want this work anymore. It's not worth it to hear the glory of the team as my knee hurts and y'all keep calling plays that aren't going to work for me as a corner. So God bless you, sir. God bless you. I appreciated that. So when you have Antonio Brown say, the only team I want to go to is the Raiders, and the Raiders are sitting there with Mike Mayock, who, as much as I disagree with the way he got the job, has more media context than almost any other general manager in the NFL right now. He knows what's BS and he knows what the truth is. So the Steelers were caught between a rock and a hard place. And because they went to Ben and said, Ben, you're our everything, it had to be a get-gone situation for Antonio. And because they have, if you look at the Steelers' contracts, Ben Roethlisberger is the only person, and I was discussing this with a Steelers fan, a friend of mine, who was very cordial as I was beating him over the head with these pieces of information. Ben Roethlisberger is the only Steeler that gets renewed 2 years with 2 years left on his deal. Everyone else gets a year. Ben Roethlisberger is the only Steeler that gets two or more years guaranteed on his contract. Every other player gets the first year of the new contract. Ben Roethlisberger is the only person, the first person that they go to whenever they have to restructure and then put that money into later years. Everyone else only gets the check cut of their regular salary and made that into a signing bonus. So you have all these things set up. And what happened was, in my opinion, and this is what I worked through with him, and I want to get your opinion on this, the big issue with Antonio Brown and the big issue with Le'Veon Bell wasn't necessarily those two players. It was the issues that came about Tomlin treating men like men, and then having the situation with Villanueva come up where he was made to be a fool. And so the clapback of that was him being even more of a disciplinarian, which has resulted in Ben being excused from those things.
I think you're right. I think it is an attitudinal thing as far as the organization. I don't know if I'd put it on Tomlin as much as saying that, because the organization has set the precedent, like with the contract dealings and whatnot. And so I think Tomlin was kind of dealing with the hand that he was dealt. And let's make sure that people are aware of the outcomes of the trade here. The Steelers will receive a third and fifth round pick in next month's draft in exchange for Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown also reworking his contract for 3 years at $50.125 million with a maximum value of $54.125 million, according to Ian Rappaport, roughly $12 million more than his old contract called for. He will receive $30.125 more million dollars guaranteed, which is exactly $30.125 more million than he was due to receive from the Steelers guaranteed.
Yep.
So let's be very real here. People say, oh, he was a prima donna. Oh, he tanked his value. Oh, he won. He won.
Yeah.
The Raiders run, and I keep calling them the Oakland Raiders. I have to make a caveat. They have no contract to play anywhere next year. I do not know what city they're going to be in. The Vegas stadium will not be built in time. This is all going to be a lot funnier for me. Like, it's going to be urgent at a certain point, and everyone's going to freak out. And because the NFL rules this country in a really weird way, they're going to treat it like it's a missile crisis. But I'm telling you right now, from this seat, it's fucking hilarious that they don't have a home next year. But they've done a good job for their first year in Vegas, because if you can come in and say, hey, we've got one of the most we've got the most explosive wide receiver possibly in the generation, great. Other big winners here, every other receiver who's got money coming in this class.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them.
Ironically, the former player they just traded to the Cowboys, because now they just set the standard by which he should ask the Cowboys for his money, given he's 5 years younger.
Another huge winner here, someone who I personally, through business dealings and personal dealings, am not fond of, Drew Rosenhaus.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned it 20 years ago. Sit-ups in the driveway. He didn't report for the physical. Who was his agent? Yep. Drew Rosenhaus. Who reps AB? Drew Rosenhaus. This is a win for him, because if I am going to be a free agent receiver, who do I know is going to fight and make sure I maximize my value? Drew Rosenhaus. It's a big win. Julio Jones, AJ Green, Michael Thomas, Tariq Hill, Amari Cooper. This is a win for every last one of those guys. It's huge. It cannot be overstated how big this is for them and how mad it's got some of the NFL establishment. Ross Tucker, who I usually enjoy, tweeted today, Antonio Brown quit on his teammates and exhibited highly erratic behavior, and as a result, got a $20 million raise with $30 million guaranteed. Great lesson for the kids out there. My reply for him was, don't love your job more than they love you is a pretty good lesson. It's a pretty good lesson, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the lesson to me is knowing your worth, because mm-hmm. Le'Veon Bell did the same thing. How dare you? No one is stupid enough to give up a franchise tag. They are when they figured out a loophole that if you franchise them again, you got to pay them like a quarterback, and then you can never do it.
Yep. Le'Veon Bell's going to get his money. You know why? Power to the players. And here on this podcast, we'll always support that. The Combine was last week. For those of you who are new to the show, or you know, I guess I never really said this out loud. I used to be a sports agent. I kind of referred to it obliquely, but I used to go to Indy that weekend. I hate Indianapolis. Indianapolis listeners, I'm sorry, but your town is boring as shit. I've gone to the Combine. It's whatever it is, what it is. I don't watch anymore on television because it's not my job anymore. But I was told that, you know, people were watching the Combine again this year, and there's some standout performances. Is there anything that you watched that you saw that was worth note of the Combine this year?
Well, I mean, for me, the big thing was seeing how, and we'll get to it, and your experience as a former agent can speak to this far more than I can as a, you know, when I was writing for the Bills and kind of seeing these things and having reporters trust me and talk to me about stuff. But it's the game within the game. It's like wrestling a lot in that people see things on television, they think it's real. And the biggest that sticks out to me is the Combine interview leaks. Those are the things that bother me more than anything. One, the interviews. Two, the Wonderlic. Those two things. And every time they leak. That train's never late. There's always this rush to talk about how unintelligent someone is and how typically a man of color and how much a team will need to, quote-unquote, build them up. And this year, Kyler Murray was an example. Last year, Lamar Jackson. Before that, it was the – And with my former team and my current team, I was traded to the Chiefs when the Bills decided that Josh Allen in the Mountain West basically playing catch up for 20 games in his career had more upside than Patrick Mahomes in Texas Tech, because the black GM there at the time thought he was a good player.
I told you
I was going to get the shot at. I was going to get the shovel was ready. I just wanted to wind up, just quick shot to the side of the head. Nothing too crazy.
That was Rock Foley, empty arena, handcuffed to the railings headshot. Like, that's what that was. That was me wincing while it was delivered, but knowing it had to be done to tell the story. The only thing for me to note from the Combine this year is the Kyler Murray thing. It's so crazy. So for those of you who don't know, Kyler Murray, you do your Combine interviews, and eventually these things get leaked to the media. So Charlie Casserly, who many of you don't know who that is, he's a former NFL general manager and talking head on television. Before I get into this, I want to warn everyone of certain things that I know that you may not. The people who represent your Mel Kuypers and your big board guys, they also rep players. So, for example, if you were, I don't know, Notre Dame quarterback Brady Quinn, and Mel Kuyper's giving you, I don't know, an obscenely high grade, and I don't know, maybe your agent called him one day, and because he's not allowed to talk to you directly, they put you on speakerphone so that you can help Mel Kuyper talk how good you are, maybe you think you're going to go in the first round. You don't, because you're Brady Quinn. But maybe, just maybe, your agent's also Mel Kuyper's agent. So when you see these people talking on television, remember who they are, that they too have vested interests in the outcomes. I say that to say this. Charlie Casserly said after the interviews, he better hope Kingsbury takes him number one in regards to Kyler Murray, because this was not good. These are the worst comments I ever got on a high-rated quarterback, and I've been doing this a long time. Leadership, not good. Study habits, not good. The board work, not good. Not good in any of all those areas, raising major concerns about what this guy is going to do. Now, before I go into what happened next, I want everyone to stop and recognize everything he said is from the Black Quarterback Evaluation Handbook dating back to the beginning of football. They're not smart enough. They're not leaders. They can't get it on the field. They cannot teach in the classroom. Essentially, Blacks are too dumb to play quarterback. That's what that – those are the Rich, you stop me. You have been involved in football a long time. You stop me if the things I'm saying are untrue.
Hey, go back to Cam Newton when he did Gruden's show, and he talked about how Auburn's up-tempo offense just gave the plays numbers, and people said, well, Cam can't possibly play football. He just knows play 43.
Like, all our plays aren't numbered. The disingenuous smile, I believe, was one with Cam as well.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, that was also through a former NFL draft researcher and I want to say Sporting News draft writer Nolan Naraki.
Oh, Naraki.
His other.
The fact that I haven't heard his name this cycle really worries. Like, is Nolan Naraki dead? Like, he always says some racist shit around this time of year. I'm trusting it's coming. He's picking his spots better now. Because Charlie Casserly really kind of knocked him off the front page. So, what happened? So, Charlie Casserly says this on Tuesday. And the responses were fast. And that's what I loved about it this year. His Oklahoma coach, Lincoln Riley, said, I personally spoke with the majority of teams he met with at the Combine, and everyone was glowing about their conversations with Kyler, basically the complete opposite of what Charlie said. Now, is it possible that Charlie Caruso, or Charlie Casserly, whatever his name is, Charlie Caruso, I know who you actually are. Charlie Casserly, it's really funny for you and me. Is it possible Charlie Casserly talked to some teams that were, maybe Kyler tanked the interview? Maybe. But I'm more inclined to trust Lincoln Riley on this one. I'm also more inclined to trust his agent, Eric Burkhart. And I'm not inclined to say this because these are people who I think are saying things that I agree with. That's why I trust them. These are people who have vested skin in the game, because Lincoln Riley's next recruiting class is dependent upon his honesty and his dealings with his current players. The next players that Eric Burkhart signed will have ties to Kyler. He will be recruiting at Oklahoma for the next 3 to 5 years on the back of what the job he does is for Kyler Murray. So while he has a stance to win here, if he lies and if he tells an untruth, he's burning bridges in the NFL. Charlie Casserly has no such worry. Know that these people have something to lose when they're defending Kyler Murray. Because I want to read Eric Burkhart's reply, because honest to God, when I read this, I was like, well, that guy should be my fucking agent. I don't even have one. Burkhart gave the following quotes on Wednesday afternoon in a Pro Football Talk. My initial reaction was to laugh because I knew the old guard would inevitably come up with some of the usual pre-draft nonsense. But I later watched the man say what he did. It was over the top and definitely felt personal, and that's where I got pissed off. First and foremost, Kyler is an exemplary person. He's everything you hoped your son to grow up to be. He were talking about the young man who's done everything right and worked relentlessly his entire life to achieve and push for greatness. We're talking about the first human ever drafted in the top 10 for two major sports leagues and just completed the single greatest season in college football history. You're not find one teammate or coach at any level in any sport who's played with Kyler Murray has anything remotely negative to say about him, his leadership, or his work ethic. This is where most agents would stop. And this is where I think he still did a great job. This is all superb. Because he's right. You can go to the tapes. You can go to the interviews. They don't just interview you and your coach and hope that they got it right. They interview everyone in your life for the NFL security and also for these pre-draft evaluations. Because then Burkhart shifted from defending Murray to attacking Casserly. And before he does this, I want to point something out, a little context clue about what's about to happen here. Charlie Casserly runs a service where he preps players for the draft interview. You can pay him to have him tell you how to interview. Apparently, Kyler didn't take him up on this, and no one seemed to have brought this up when Charlie originally was bringing up his points. Burkhart doesn't bring it up, but he brings up some other great points here. So what do I think about an agenda-driven analyst who's never once talked to Kyle or any of his coaches or teammates? I think it's disgusting and embarrassing, and Casserly should be ashamed of himself. Fire. Further, my business partners and I personally represent the coaches and executives who sat in on 8 of 10 Kyler's 10 formal combine interviews. Fire. I spoke directly to each of them as well as executives from the other two teams and many others who I don't represent but were present, and all of them were extremely positive about all his interviews, with each citing specific examples as to why. Fire. And then he made it personal. The bottom line here is it calls into question the motives of a man to get on national television and cite anonymous sources on things such as leadership and study habits about someone he's never met. Look, if you don't like Kyler's game, that's cool. If you don't like his size and want to talk about that, that's fine too. If you're into a Heath Shewer-looking type guy, then hype those guys and say why. Stop. Charlie Casserly once drafted Heath Shewer when he was in his job. It may have cost him his job. This is fire from this agent. But when you slander the character and work ethic of a young man who's worked his ass off his entire life and did everything right to put himself in his current position, you'd better cite your sources and come with a better record than 18-46 as the GM of the Texans in his own leadership and accountability, have been questioned by his old bosses and his old colleagues, as well as the greatest coach on the planet, because in 2010, Bill Belichick said, what's been more wrong than Charlie Casserly since he left the Redskins? His percentages like a meteorologist. Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Burkhart, agent at large.
I mean, you look at Charlie Casserly, and you look at his time with Washington, and, you know, am I going to have to be the guy that talks about with the Washington football team the fact that they won three of their Super Bowls? I'm sorry, two of their three Super Bowls, because they did beat the Bills and shellack them in the one. Sorry, Buffalo. winning strike-shortened seasons.
All I'm saying is...
Oh, am I going to have to get into Charlie Casserly in Houston? Bringing in David Carr and deciding not having a line would be a good idea for a guy.
Forget all of that. If I'm Charlie Casserly and this comes out on Wednesday, how do you go to work on Thursday? How do you show your face? This is an excoriation the likes of which. This is, you know what that was? That was a promo. That was a damn promo. He got a promo on his ass.
He got dog walked. But you got to remember, Palm, when you have the unassailable protection of being a white general manager in the NFL, that will give you the ability to come out and say the most ridiculous. Look at what happened with Polian. Polian did all this to disparage Kaepernick. After Kaepernick, the day Kaepernick's hearing comes out where he made the buku bucks by way of the NFL, trying to conceal all the stuff they'd been up to and didn't want to come out in discovery, he decides to say the All-American Football League didn't want a player like that because he wanted too much money. Meanwhile, homeboy can't keep the lights on for his own league, just like he couldn't with the Colts when he had the cap severely out of whack. So these guys have this protection, and now you have this new guard of people who can talk to people. It isn't a thing anymore of, well, you haven't seen what I've seen. We've looked. For us as fans, for you as a former agent, we've seen now on television for the better part of, let's see, that was when I was at college, so 15, 20 years the NFL put this stuff on television. You can't hide behind it anymore. Palm, if I was in any job, like, you know, I have no qualms because I'm very proud. I work at the University of Pittsburgh. If I was interviewed at Pitt and someone sat me down and had a staring contest with me as part of my job interview process, I would think they are insane. But that's par for the course for the Seahawks, apparently, who did that during this year's Cotton Combine with a prospect.
So I've actually been in the middle of – the reason there's no show last week, I've just been very busy, but also I've been interviewing and changing jobs. I work for a new firm, and it's one of those things where I was like, wow, I wonder if my interviews with these companies had gone this way, what a ridiculous thing that would be. What a ridiculous thing that would be. You know what else is ridiculous? Marijuana's still legal in the NFL. You know why marijuana's still legal in the NFL? Because David Irving's retiring behind it. David Irving, defensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys, says he's done with the NFL on a live stream. He had been suspended again. He said on an Instagram Live on Thursday, basically, guys, I quit. I know they're talking about suspicion, all that nonsense. I'm out of here. I'm not doing this shit no more. He gave his announcement while smoking what appeared to be a marijuana cigar, commonly referred to as a blunt, or so I'm told by the internet. Now, Rich, this is interesting because we look at the policies of certain other sports. Like, I don't know, let's just pick a sport. Hockey. The NHL's policy is if you pop for weed, you know what happens? They call you. They call you. If you pop for anything, they call you. The NHL's drug policy is, hey, we establish if it's a matter of concern as far as addiction and health, and we move on. It's almost like there's some sort of marginalization between the sports and the demographics of said sports and the treatment of drug offenses herein. Let's not worry about that right now. Let's worry about this other story that I told you was going to get a lot bigger and has gotten a lot bigger, and I told you so. I told you so. I told you so. Because Robert Kraft getting $60 hand jobs, very funny. Also, very ugly. If you decide to look at the human trafficking aspect, and it's come out now that while Mr. Kraft's name was not the largest on the list, as was reported initially, the owner and proprietor of the spa, who, as you may know, was an active participant in the human trafficking, is apparently a member of the Mar-a-Lago Club and watched the Super Bowl in the company of our sitting chief executive of the United States. I'm not going to cast aspersions on anyone. I'm not going to sell you the things that I've read this morning that have made my blood run a little cold. I'm not going to point out all the many ways that this is insanely problematic and why billionaires using these things is probably a problem. I'm not going to point out that the founder and owner of massage parlors linked to prostitution and possibly human trafficking, also selling rich Chinese people access to the President of the United States. Because via this massage parlor owner, Chinese executives have been meeting with Donald Trump. I'm not going to point that out. I'm not. That's just too much smoke. I'm not going to point out the fact that the Kushners, and as late as I believe it was 2018, were confirmed as to be selling visas from China to America for the low price, $200,000. I'm not going to say that all the people who said, "Oh, you're making fun of Kraft just for getting a little hand job," were notably downplaying something that's probably a lot worse. I'm not going to point those things out today. It's not that podcast. Keep watching this story, though, because it's going to get a lot worse for a lot more people before it gets better. And now we've reached the point of the show where I go to Rich's wheelhouse, where I give him that fastball heat right over the middle of the plate, and we talk a little WWE. Right now, we're in the build to WrestleMania season, and as we're going to talk about that in a second, I want to talk about the hottest angle possibly in sport. You mentioned that the future, Mr. or Mrs. 316, could be coming down the pike here. We've entered the phase of the outsider in wrestling where they do the heel turn, and Ronda Rousey is now using the F word to describe wrestling. You and I are historians enough of the sport to know enough that this is a tried and true tactic. But watching the discussion around it, would you say that it's worked this time?
I would say it's as get the bell ready. As Venerable Torts, senior columnist Bruce Mitchell noted when we were talking about it. Thank you. It's working. But the big thing is, let's see if it works up until WrestleMania, because right now I think it's going to give a great rating. I think it's going to have eyes on Fastlane, and I think that it's going to keep Ronda in everyone's mouths. Now, what I don't know is this going to help Becky and Charlotte when Ronda eventually takes that leave of absence? And so that's where I'm kind of like hedging my bets and waiting. But for now, I'm fine with it. I've always seen Ronda, even when she was in UFC, as the person who could, when things were down, she was going to be the worst person in the interview. But when things are good, she was better than anyone. And, you know, you never have to worry about her. So in this case, her doing what she's doing on YouTube, in addition to the F word, I think the usage of foul language and stuff like that on YouTube is interesting to me far more than anything, because that means they've given her the green light to do so. Similar to this time last year when Vince dropped the F bomb on Raw when he was talking to Roman. So well, go ahead.
I think the foul language thing is something that they've definitely leaned into, because they know that the Ronda Rousey character is not one contingent on WWE. It's not one that needs WWE's approval, and so they're letting her fly a little higher because she can survive without them. I think you're right there. But it adds a level of intrigue. My concern is similar to yours, is that we are a ways out from Mania, and to play this card now doesn't give the story a whole lot of places to go until Mania. Do I think that talent-wise, the three women, including this new heel, kind of a little bit looser Ronda Rousey, could carry this build? Yeah, of course they could. I think I'm like you, where I get what they're doing. I like what they're doing. I'm just a little nervous about how long they can hold it up. But again, these are people who seem to have figured out how to build a perfect mania on the fly for the last 4 years, and they've always let us done it well. So I'm gonna let them do it. Also, I want to talk about Roman Reigns' return. It's so funny because I was at a friend's restaurant this past week, and we realized that we remembered that we've known Joe since he was in college. Joe's a year back of me in college, so I was in Atlanta his senior year in tech, and so we ran in the same circle. I knew a lot of tech kids. He knew me, and it was so funny. I was at my buddy's restaurant, and he ended up texting Joe the day he got clear, because he's not a wrestling fan, but he saw it on Good Morning America. He just texted and said, "Hey man, making sure you're still good," and he said, "Bro, just glad to be back, do what I love," and that was it, and that was all it was. But it's so nice and it's so wholesome. And the way the internet has found a way to make this man recovering from leukemia something gross makes me sick. And for those of you who are not indoctrinated in too much pro wrestling internet, first of all, God bless you. I shouldn't even be here. Second of all, there's been like I would say almost not even a groundswell. There's been voices in the wilderness saying that the leukemia was a work or not real leukemia, or that his treatments weren't real. You're closer to a journalist in this stuff than I am. What the hell?
Well, again, I tried to cover this with Wade when Roman came back that night. And the one thing Roman and Wade, like Wade is the teacher in the back that will always give you like a 67 because he knows you can have an 85 or higher. And so Roman has been one of the toughest people. Wade's been one of the toughest critics of Roman. And when I brought up the fact that people were saying that the leukemia was faked and all this other stuff, he's like, you know what? We're not even going to countenance that because that's such a stupid remark that the person saying it is not worthy of your time nor your respect. And I was taken aback by how frank Wade was on air when doing this. And I'm in the same boat. I think anyone who can think that this was faked in any way and think that he would put his family, his coworkers, because none of them knew when he made that announcement what he was going to say when he went out there. And anyone that's in the area, like for instance, when he went, and he mentioned this during his promo, he went and talked to the kids he had been seeing at the hospital in Atlanta, the Children's Cancer Center. Mm-hmm. And he told them first before he even was getting into the, like before he even was Roman Reigns, Joe went there and told those kids because they went on the journey with him, had sent him letters, had been really his rock during the time of taking the pills and kind of going through the whatever he needed to do to get right. And, a lot of people in wrestling, especially on Twitter, have this, and Cam is far more eloquent with it. They have this bee in their bonnet, or they have this just inexorable need to prove that, like, the established people, Wade, Dave, and others are, like, just horrible, and only them, this guy in their house, knows the true thing of wrestling. So the big thing became, Meltzer mentioned 2 weeks ago, he wasn't sure what he took, but it was probably a pill. The dude from that was formerly of my brain stopped working. Not Satin. John Wall Staff. Satin, yes. So Ryan Satin took an out of contest quote from Meltzer and put it up saying that Meltzer didn't know that Roman was on pills and thought it was fake. He was actually talking about the people that were saying those things. Right. And because of that out of context, Nia Jax and all these other wrestlers are like, well, F Meltzer, he's a piece of crap, and this and that and the third. And he just came out and said, hey, to anyone who heard that and thought I was saying that, I apologize. I had questions. I obviously believe Joe. And the thing that gets me, and this is where, like, to you, when you were mentioning with football and what you were mentioning with your friend at the restaurant, The Rock is friends with Dave Meltzer. If you think on any planet he's going to do anything to disparage a person's cousin that he is that close with just for giggles, it's like the Batman meme. It's like, you really think this man is going to – good luck.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild to me. And so for me, and that's with the Torch, I think with the Observer it's different because the Observer has been breaking news regularly over the years. And Wade went to a model right after the phones, the 1-900 numbers, the 1-800 numbers stopped and they went more to websites. He went with a model of, let's just be the guardians and the historians of wrestling history. So we do more commentary, with the exception of Wade breaking the Dean Ambrose story, which then led to WWE having to admit it the next day, which is something that they never do with anything.
Right.
That's like what we do. So for me, I can talk all the live long day about the historical things and feel good about it. But what I'm never going to do, what you won't see me do, if you all follow me or you see me interacting with Palm, I don't talk about stuff I don't know. And I don't talk to people who don't know what they're talking about, because that's a waste of your time and energy. And that's why you should avoid most of wrestling Twitter.
It's really Thank just you for a my terrible, tip. Terrible place. No, you're 100% right. Before we get out of here, I do want to talk about kind of the build to Mania. So Mania for me has been kind of uneven at first, but now it's coming together. It's a hell of a show. So we're going to get Batista, Triple H. We're going to get Kofi Bryan, hopefully. The three ladies are going to be doing their thing in the Triple Threat. What is your feeling as we watch this WrestleMania take hold, card take hold? Spoilers, you're going to be back on before Mania happens. But how do you think about kind of how everything's taking hold right now and kind of formulating into a full show and this outdoor show in New York when the weather hopefully will hold up?
Yeah, last time I went there, it was raining. And the only thing that kept me from getting rained on was we paid for obstructed seats, and it was where the Statue of Liberty was built. So her fake torch was keeping me from getting wet. So this time around, unless I'm getting a press seat representing the torch, I'm just going to watch it from my friend's apartment and call it, because I don't have the energy to be in New York in the rain after having done a week of wrestling shows just to say I was there. Even though I will amend this. If Kofi Kingston's match stays a one-on-one, I will strongly consider whatever I can do to get there, I'll do it, because I'm going to be in New York anyway for the other shows. And I'll be in there for access, so I might be able to give you another live report and see how awesome things are with Cam, provided he doesn't get arrested for, you know, impersonating Josie Smollett. But that is a conversation for another day.
I'm really glad you listened to the show. I'm really glad it's going to pay off. Thank you for that. No, I'm right with you. The thing about it is, now that they've announced next year's in Tampa, we got to have serious conversations about how much y'all are going to get me into. Because this is driving distance for your boy. Tampa next year, I'm calling in all the favors next year.
Yeah, I'm definitely. The Tampa next year will be even better, because that's my folks live in Tampa. So that could be like a little mini family vacay while I do the wrestling thing. And if so, help me, if they don't put Kyrie Sane on the Buccaneers pirate
they
ship.
They have to. They have to. Look, there's a pirate ship in the arena. Kyrie Sane has to be involved in some way. Let's do a women's three-way for the tag titles. Let's do the Pirates in the Sky versus the Boss Hug Connection versus the Iconics. Just do that. Call it a day.
I'm with it. I'm here for
it. Who wouldn't want to see that? Kyrie Sane doing that elbow off the top of the ladder. Let's go. Possibly before, because she's crazy.
My brain's breaking just thinking about that right now.
You guys can check out Rich on the PW Torch Deep Dive every Saturday. And you can also check him out on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. He's on there occasionally. You were on the Raw episode where Roman came back. If anything else you want to plug or tell them where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. I would say I'm also on Wednesdays in the Torch for the East Coast cast with Travis Bryant and Cameron Hawkins. I do the VIP side. Cam does the free side because he is – never mind. Not gonna keep it clean as I get out of here. But I like folks to pay for it, and he doesn't. I'll just leave it at that. You can reach me at Twitter @rich_fan, like the appliance with an extra N, and you will most likely see me talking about anything: politics, sports, comics. I'm right now currently engrossed in dancing all over the incels' graves that said that Captain Marvel would not make a lot of money, $455 million in, and they can kick rocks.
I may go see it a third time this weekend. I honestly might. That was your show. This is your outro. See you guys next week.